Shadows with Jordan. Welcome back to another episode of Into the Shadows. Today, I really wanted to talk about the documentary that everyone seems to be talking about, which is Quiet on Set. It's a documentary based on Dan Schneider, who is a creator of Nickelodeon back in the 90s, and all the underbelly stuff that has happened underneath that production period of time in child acting. And I have to say, this documentary gives a beautiful insight, and I hate to say that, but it does. It gives a beautiful insight of how the predator mind works. And I don't hear many people talking about that. I'll go over all the other points of view of what everyone has been saying. But when I was watching this, and when you watch it, you'll be yelling at the TV, you'll be saying, oh my God, and you'll see the red flags. But when I was watching it, I tried to view myself how I was back in the day when I was a victim. And not only did I see the red flags, not only did I see the pain in the victims, but I also understood the predator mind in such a weird way. Because of all the healing and understanding that I've done personally from my own experience. Now, a lot of people don't really think of predators as smart, but they are. And that's why they get away with it. They groom not only the kids, but the adults as well. And I want to go over what grooming means, because a lot of people don't really understand what the word grooming means. Grooming is the practice of preparing and training someone for a particular purpose or activity. Now, most people think of grooming as a form of sexual abuse, and if you met a person who is grooming you, they may try to sexually assault you, which is when they start to touch you in a sexual way that's inappropriate and that you do not consent to. They also may use secrecy, blame, gifts, threats, and violence to stop you from telling anybody. Now, most people think of that as being groomed, which is what we're talking about. But the first definition that I gave, the practice of preparing or training someone for a particular purpose or activity, that right there, not only do they groom the children into that and then sexually assault them, but they groom whoever is around that child or that victim. They make things seem like it's normal and normalize certain situations that are no longer normal. They prey on the weak and the vulnerable. They seek out families who are already broken. They seek out families who are not together, that don't communicate, that have a lot of problems, whether they're missing a father figure or a mother figure, or they realize that the mother and the father figure, even though they're together, have broken communication or some kind of problem. They're very smart when it comes to this, and they know tactics and how to get the child or the victim isolated. When you first are introduced to this documentary, they talk about a PA's assistant. When you think about the levels that happen or the levels of power, a PA's assistant is a nobody on set, really. But when they talk about this PA's assistant, they talk about how this PA assistant not only charmed his way to the children, but he made sure to charm his way through the parents first. And a lot of people don't see that as a red flag. They think, oh, this person's just nice. And they normalize it. They think when the things that come out that aren't normal, they start to rationalize and go, oh, no, it's nothing. And they push it to the side. They chalk it up like it's nothing. That it can't be. It couldn't be. And that's what ends up happening. With my situation, And I'll just give an example. My situation, what happened with me, my predator was a well-renowned family member of a prestige family in a very small town. Everyone knows everyone in the town. It's a very small town. And these people were very well known in the community. So, of course, when I raised my voice and spoke about what happened, it was shock and confusion because this family is well to do. There's no way. And in my case, people actually stood up for the predator. And you see that a lot, not just in sexual assault cases, but you kind of see that a lot even with murder cases, where all of a sudden you see the neighbors come out and they're like, oh, this guy was perfect and all this stuff. And it's grooming. It's grooming you and they're charming you and they're getting you to think they're one way when they're another. They're masking themselves. And that's exactly what this PA's assistant did. He masked himself. He groomed the parents into thinking, oh, he's just a harmless person, you know. And then when they exchanged numbers and emails with the kids on set, it became, oh, nothing. It's just a coworker. It became normalized. And then all of a sudden, you know, emails look okay. They look, you know, fine. Until they're not. And it takes a while to groom someone. It doesn't happen quite overnight. And when you listen to some of the victim stories, like Drake Bell, when he's talking in this documentary, it took a while for the predator to get himself in between and wedge himself in between all the people around Drake. And it's interesting because Drake's dad saw what was happening and told and raised his voice and said, this is inappropriate. This is not okay. And of course, the predator has already groomed all the other people on set. Oh, that's just how he is. He's just gay. Da 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 da. And making excuses for the behavior. Because the predator has already groomed and normalized the behavior. So when someone speaks out of turn, they look crazy. So that predator had to take time and really wedge himself. But he noticed that the parents were not getting along. They had a divorce. It was a broken family. So he took that time to groom and shape all the thoughts, all the doubts, sowing the doubts into the mother's mind, Drake's mind, and isolating Drake from his father, who was only there trying to protect him. And even once the father was out of the picture, it took time for that predator to get to where he wanted. He kept grooming and taking that time. It started off with just going and picking Drake up and taking him to his auditions, and it seemed normal. Then he isolated him more from his parent, from his mom, and said, you know, it'd probably be easier instead of driving half across California, driving you home, why don't you stay at my house? And that took time. As Drake started to spend more time and sleeping over, then he got more comfortable. He isolated Drake. So you see, predators will take their time. When they have a target in mind and a set goal, they will act on that goal. And they're smart because they divide, they conquer, they sow seeds of doubt. They target vulnerable and weak families. And I know that may seem like I am talking up predators, but it's not. It's the fucking reality of it. For my predator, he saw a mom busting her ass and a small child who had no father figure. It was the perfect, vulnerable scenario. A mother who is trying to make ends meet, who's not really around, no father figure, no one in the house talking to the child and keeping eyes on the child. And you see, this predator wasn't just a predator to me. He was also abusive. So he was already showing red flags of being physically abusive. But these predators will seek that out and know that the target that they have will stick around. It's actually kind of scary how their mind works. And the more I watch documentaries about this, and the more I have deep understanding of what happened to me, it's a very scary place to have a child who is coming up on the age of the age I was abused at. It's terrifying. I'm actually scared to let my child into the world because I see so many red flags. I experienced the red flags. What's interesting about this documentary is when you see the vulnerability of the families and how they were taken advantage of, you start to go, where are the parents? Where the fuck are the parents? Where is the dads? That was my biggest question. Where the fuck are the dads? Drake Bell's dad could spot all this shit a mile away. He knew something was up. And if there were more dads on set, maybe things would have been different. But most of those families sacrifice a lot to have their child do their passion of acting. Most of the time, the families are in two different states. Some, the dad is working where the mom is, you know, sacrificing her own career for their child to make sure their child has a career. It's a very, very strained system already. And a lot of times breaks up a lot of the families that are trying to, you know, push their child into this career or allow them into this career. What's also interesting is you see there's Brandy's mom. And you can tell she had her own motives. And this is another thing to talk about. When she's talking about how the PA's assistant charmed his way, talked his way, groomed his way with the parents, she didn't seem to realize any of the red flags about exchanging numbers with her or emails with her daughter, Brandy. She didn't see the harm in it. She even checked some of the emails and they seemed to have been fine until one day it wasn't. She had the opportunity right then and there to call the police, but instead her own ego got into the way. Her own fears of her ego got into the way. She thought about herself. And I want to talk about that a little more, a little later, because it's not just the parents in this situation. It's every fucking adult that was on that set. But she decided, instead of calling the cops, she didn't want the police to think how bad of a mother she was because she allowed her daughter to talk to an older person, an older male. And that's one of the things the predator knows will happen. They get to know and groom the adults, learn their behaviors, the way they think. And that's why they choose the children. It's one of the many reasons why they choose the children that they target to. Now, as you're watching this and you're also asking yourself about the parents and where they are and why didn't any of them stand up, there was one mom that actually did stand up. She talked about how her experience was pushed away, how her bringing up these things, she was told, don't do that. You're making a scene. It's nothing. And like I said, these predators have already groomed these production companies and people around them. They've already masked themselves. So again, when a parent does speak up, they look crazy. They look like they're ruining their child's career. Then you start to ask yourself, why doesn't anybody else say anything? If these are major red flags, how could the person behind the camera not say anything? How could the director not say anything? How could the writers write what they were writing and giving adult context or adult jokes on a kid's show? How can that be? How can no one stand up and say, listen, this is fucking inappropriate. There's no way this should be happening. There's no way these kids should be acting these scenes out. There's absolutely no way. What the fuck are you guys thinking? And all these things have slipped through so many people's hands. It's not just Dan Schneider. And it's not just the PA. It's not just Brian Peck, who was, I think, some kind of vocal coach or some shit like that. But everyone else, it's the executive producers, it's the writers who were helping Dan Schneider write these. Every person thought about themselves in that moment in time and didn't give two shits about what the fuck the kids were doing. And you hear about that as the documentary goes on. You hear from the writers. You hear from the costume designers. You hear about these inappropriate moments that are happening behind scenes in those small rooms. And no one stands up. Everyone's worried about their career, what happens to them, how much money they're making. And nothing crosses their mind about the children. You know, part of Dan Schneider's argument as this documentary comes out is that it didn't just go through him. It went through so many people's hands. And he has a point there. It went through so many people's hands before it was ever recorded. And even then, when the audience is there, and the person behind the camera is there, no one says, cut. No, this is inappropriate. And I get it. Like the definition says, groomers will manipulate the situation. They will use power. They will use power, power dynamics. They will threaten. They will manipulate. They will make people look crazy. They will give gifts in order to stay. And I experienced that as well through my own situation. My predator threatened to harm my family. My predator said, if you don't do what I'm telling you to do, I will murder your family. And honestly, it's something that I actually realized I was holding onto and holding resentment and anger against my family. Because I sacrificed myself to make sure that they were alive, or at least that's what my child brain thinks. That I did this to save them, and how could their actions all these years later not reflect a thank you? And that is still the manipulation going on, even years after. They make you think that this is normal. At first, it started with gifts. It started with praises and gifts. And then when I rebelled back, that's when the manipulation and the scare tactics happen, because they're losing control. So they want to put you back in your place. And for me, it started with, Disney at the time had Disney games on the internet. It's just the boom of the internet starting. And it started with me just sitting and playing these games because I was rewarded for something good. It wasn't even anything sexual. I was rewarded for just doing my homework or whatever. And then it became, let me sit, have you sit on my lap. And then, of course, you know what happens. And it's normalized. It's small steps to make you feel like it's normal. It's not just this thing that happens. I mean, yes, there are predators that just, go for the target, but a lot of them take their time in order to groom and make things normal. Especially for a long period of time. They know that they have a long period of time with that child or their victim. You know, a lot of people, as they watch this, they keep saying they want to hear from other people, other actresses and actors that were on set, and they want to hear their stories. And even though it's worthwhile to hear their stories, it's hard for victims to share their stories. It's hard to speak about what happens to you because you feel gross. You feel like people are going to judge you for what you say. You feel dirty. You feel... there's just this tarnish to you when you talk about it. And as you talk about it, you relive those moments as if it was the very first time again. So it's hard as a victim to really come forth and forward. It's hard for me to even come onto this podcast and talk about things because there are some things where I'm like, maybe I shouldn't talk about that. Maybe that's just too much. Maybe I should delete that. Maybe I should take that out. Maybe people don't need to know that or hear that. Or what are people who know me think when they hear that? You know, still to this day, I have those moments. There's an episode hanging out in the wings because I'm like, I don't know if I want to post that yet. I don't know if I want to share that. And I keep pushing it back and pushing it back and pushing it back. And it's all from the grooming that has happened to you during that time period. I mean, you can see that in this documentary when Drake is talking about his experience, he stops and goes, I don't know if I want to talk about that yet. And you can tell he's uncomfortable and that he has never really spoken about this to anyone except for maybe his therapist. But even then, it looks like he's never actually spoken out loud exactly what has transpired to him. And that's why he can't really express or say what happened to him. And that's why he alludes to the most worst thing that, think about the worst thing that could happen. And that's exactly what happened. And it's hard. It's hard to come to terms with the fact that that trauma happened to you. And how are people going to think? And what are they going to think? And are they going to judge you? Or are they going to look at you different? I know for me, for the longest time, I couldn't even say what happened to me. Even though I stood up and I told my story in court, on the stand, I was in therapy and I had written down on a piece of paper and I wrote, I was raped. And that was hard because I couldn't even say it. I had to write it. I couldn't even say it. But that was the first time I ever truly acknowledged the word rape. I remember that day because the therapist was just like so proud that I got to that moment for myself. But it took multiple different therapists to get it out of me to even remotely have trust in someone to talk about it. Because I was still under the impression that if I spoke about the details of what happened to me, that something was going to happen. And the scare tactics didn't just stay with me as a child. This predator, it's weird because this predator had ways of getting my phone number as a teenager and calling the phone number and leaving text messages. This is right when text messages just started, you know, leaving voicemails and text messages of I know what you did, you lied on stand, just the harassment still kept going. Even trying to find me on social media and other family members on social media. Right when Facebook and MySpace were just a thing. Like, how do you find someone like that? It's insane. Nowadays, it's easy. And while a lot of people are talking about this documentary, they're also talking about the family bloggers and vloggers that are out there on YouTube and TikTok. One in particular, I think the little girl is Ren, and her mom shows these videos that are very inappropriate. And you can tell they're made for the wrong type of content, for the wrong type of audience. And a lot of people are starting to put two and two together, especially because of the adult raunchy content that was being put out with Dan Schneider's shows. And this is where I want to take everyone to the next step. Is a lot of people say, well, you know, Dan Schneider put those, you know, adult contents in for the adults who are watching because, you know, it's something for the adults, so they stay watching it. But that sentence alone is grooming. That sentence alone has normalized this behavior. And this sentence has been since the dawn of fucking day with regular fucking cartoons. That is something that has been normalized and groomed into us, thinking that, oh, the adult innuendos and the adult content in these children's shows and movies are for the adults to entertain the adults. But why are they in there? Because it's subliminal messaging to the children. Even though they don't understand it, they're still soaking it in. And it's grooming. And they show, in this documentary, they show perfect examples. And I mean perfect fucking examples of these inappropriate innuendo grooming scenes. And it makes you wonder, why the fuck were those in there? Because they're way above and beyond just a small skit or a small line. And again, why didn't anybody say anything? It's because everyone was groomed to think that it was normal. They were threatened for their position and their career. They were manipulated. It's a very, very scary world out there. Very, very scary world out there. Now, if you look back in the history, and this doesn't just happen with Dan Schneider. He's just a very big example. But if you look back in the history of Hollywood and children actors, you can see some of the video footage of Shirley Temple. Why is she in some of her songs singing and dancing with just grown men and then sitting on their lap? Or if you take a look at Drew Barrymore's history and dive deep into her life, you will see so many red flags and so many grooming situations. If you take a look back at the old Disney shows, the black and white films, and even some of the colored ones, you will see Donald Duck having a penis. You will see words in the background. I mean, if you take a look at some of the Disney movies, if you look at Pinocchio, it's a boy who, it's a wooden boy who wants to turn real, goes to a island called Pleasure Island, and it's all boys. No one thinks about this movie and how inappropriate it is. They turn them into donkeys and jackasses. It's very, very disturbing. And it's been in our faces for a very long time. Again, we're being told that this is normal, that the jokes are for the adults. But like I said, it's definitely subliminal messaging to our littles. And don't think it's not happening now. It's just more secretive now. It's not so open now in our cartoons. And the agenda is different. You can think however you want to think. But there are some things that you look at. I watch every single thing my daughter watches. I sit with her and sacrifice my own TV time and my sanity to make sure I know what she's watching. And there are some things where you're just like, that's not appropriate for their age. That's not appropriate for their age. That's not a topic they should really be learning about right now at their age. So it's not just something that has happened in the past. It's continued to happen over time. So, our children are very vulnerable, and their minds are just starting to learn. And that subliminal messaging, it shapes them. It shapes them. There is so much that I wanted to talk about with this documentary, and it's hard. It was a hard watch to watch, especially for me, for being, I hate to use it, but a victim of sexual abuse. It was very heartbreaking. It was very heartbreaking because, of course, as you know, people are telling their stories and what's going on, I think about what transpired with me and to relive that. And there are some documentaries where it's hard to watch. There's one documentary that and this documentary is wild. It's called Something About the Something About a Family. And it's this child that gets abducted by a family friend. He groomed the family and takes her on these long trips, basically kidnaps the kid, and then ends up not only sexually abusing the child, but comes back into town and takes advantage of the mom and the dad, isolates them, and they have their own sexual experience with this man. And that documentary was absolutely wild. But again, these documentaries give insight of how the predator mind works. And it's scary to see how their mind works. It's very, very scary to see that they know where to target, and how to manipulate the situation. But this doesn't just happen on sets in Hollywood. It happens in every industry. And I think we're starting to see that more and more now with yesterday's raid on P. Diddy's house and the allegations that are coming out about him and what transpired on Epstein Island. There are predators everywhere, and they're masked, so it's hard to see the red flags. Of course, when you're watching a documentary, you're screaming at the TV because you see the red flags, but when you're in that situation, those red flags can be dismissed or not seen at all. They could be talked away, thinking, oh, that's not what happened, or that couldn't have happened. There's no way, or maybe I'm making it up. And it's hard when the predator has power. It's very hard when the predator has power. When the predator has higher means to get away. To get away with it and keep getting away with it. And you see that in this documentary. You see that with Dan Schneider. Even though he wasn't directly a predator, or at least no one has come forth yet about any predatory behavior from him, he was, in a sense, a predator because of the way he was creating these shows and the atmosphere on the set. He may not have been a sexual predator, but he was a predator, nonetheless. And when you have power, it's easy to get away with it. I mean, he gave Amanda Bynes a character called Amanda Taint. Yes, Taint. You know, the skin between the sack and the ball sack and the ass or whatever the fuck it is. Yes, that. Now, when I was a kid, I thought it was Tate, T-A-T-E, but it wasn't. And when executives questioned Dan about this, he said, oh, no, it's like tainted, like the word tainted, not taint. And they just let him get away with it. And because little things like that happened, the more he pushed the envelope. And because he was getting all these ratings for these kids' shows, they rewarded his behavior, which gave him more power. Now, see, with my predator, because of the influence that they had in town, the power was different. You know, you're told no one's going to believe you. I'm a grown up. You're a child. What do you know? Then it became more and more, and even showed their power and worth in the community. Now, I'm not saying that they did anything, but coincidentally, when I finally talked to the police department, a tape went missing. No one put a tape in. So everything that I had spoken to the police about and had to use dolls to show what was actually happening, none of that was recorded. Now, I'm not saying anything about my situation, but it's interesting and coincidental that they are very well known and that these things happened in a very small town. I could only imagine being in a underbelly of Hollywood and the higher ups and the power dynamic and what that looks like and the manipulation and power tactics being used in order to keep someone silent. I don't know. Can only imagine, because I can only see from how my side handled things. I'm sure it's a lot worse. This documentary, I love the fact that everyone is bringing attention to the underbelly of Hollywood. I really do. I love that this is a conversation that people are having, because I don't think it's a conversation that a lot of people have. Don't think that it's talked about a lot. It's still very taboo to talk about sexual assault, and especially when it comes to children. A lot of it has to do with blame and shame and ignorance and other factors. As a parent, like I said before, it's hard to think that I have to send my daughter out into this world, because I'm terrified. I'm absolutely terrified to send her out into this world. Especially because it's hard. It's hard because strangers go up to her and say how cute she is and how smiley and bubbly she is and how sweet she is and how much she looks like a doll, like a porcelain doll, and just like all these things. And as a kid, those are things that I heard from strangers and even people are, you know, around me that knew me. So it's a trigger for me. And the more she gets older, I just think about the fact that I was that age, and I just can't believe it. I think about how innocent she is and how innocent I must have been. And, you know, I could only imagine my little self back then. You know, and it's hard because, you know, on one hand, we want to hear from these victims and we want to hear from everything. But I gotta say, I'm surprised that how many has come out. You know, sometimes as victims, they call it blocking out, where we're so traumatized by the situation that we have blocked it out of our memory so bad that we can't remember, or we don't want to remember. And I'm sure that's probably what's happened to Drake Bell along the lines. And why he felt very, and what it seemed very uncomfortable to talk about what actually transpired, and why he didn't really say much except for, you know, alluding to certain things. What I also have a fear of with this is, as I learn more and more about predators and their behavior, a lot of times the cycle continues. So a predator is a victim. The victim becomes the predator. And for a long time, I was terrified that I would harm someone else. I was terrified of harming someone else. And they say when you have sex with someone and your fluids are exchanged with each other, that there is a piece of you with that person. And a lot of it comes down to when men ejaculate into a woman, there comes, stays within them, and their DNA stays within them for at least 10 years. And this can happen with, you know, male-on-male ejaculation into their rectum and stuff like that, that DNA sits with them. And I wonder, as I was watching this documentary, if that's why the cycle continues. Because there's a piece of them in them. And for a long time, I used to be very scared that I would, become the very thing that I was scared of. You know, these victims, we try to process what has happened to us. And a lot of us struggle with that if we don't get help. And you can see that with Drake Bell and his situation. He was a victim, but then ended up having exchange of text messages with a minor. So, you know, the cycle repeated itself in a way. And you see that a lot. There's a victim who then wants to take power over someone and wants to know what that feels like and tries to take control and manipulate someone who is vulnerable. They want to know what that power dynamic feels like. Then there are others that search through their sexual partners and what that's like and reenacting that feeling of being used. That's exactly what I did during my spiral. It's the only thing I knew. So it was the only thing I felt comfortable, I guess, with. It's the only thing that that felt normal, even though it wasn't normal. Then there are others who search it out in other ways, and yeah, that's what fetishes are for, and people seek out that fetish to try to understand, and it's all in the way of processing, and some victims go through that. I know at one point in my spiral, I tried. I didn't try to be a predator. I just tried to reenact fetishes, and it was weird. But yeah, it's a process, and you're trying to figure out, is this normal? Is this not normal? And you're so used to the abuse that anything else other than that doesn't feel good. It doesn't feel right. It's a fucked up thing of way of thinking. But yeah, for the longest time, I thought I would turn out to be the monster. And it's hard because when you think about it that way, the victim becomes the predator. The predator becomes, you know, the predator takes a victim, that victim, and that cycle. Then you put empathy on that predator. And there's a part of me that struggles with that. Because when I started to deal with my own, healing, I had to think about that for my own forgiveness of what happened to me. That, you know, maybe this person was a victim of some sort and took it out on me. And I talk about that in my spiral, where then I took that on and then I manipulated and hurt other people. I used other people just like someone used me. You know, and I repeated a cycle. I mean, it wasn't predatory behavior, but I did repeat a cycle of the power dynamics and using someone and the manipulation. So this documentary really brought up a lot, just a lot of this documentary just brought up a lot, and I really wanted to talk about it here on the podcast. I think it's something that should be talked about. I think it should definitely be something to be heard. It's hard to hear. I'm sure I'm missing so much that I wanted to talk about, but I think for now I'll leave it here with this. If you have ever been sexually assaulted, do not think for a second that it is your fault, because it's not your fault. And if you are a parent of someone who has been groomed and you yourself has been groomed by a predator, it's also not your fault. These predators are smart, and they know what they're doing. But either way, let me know your thoughts.